Julie originally asked me to speak in Zazenkai at the beginning of the year following my work, or what was happening in my job with the earthquake in Padang last year. So that was September 30th last year. Since then, we've had another earthquake and tsunami. So that's as much as I see this as an honour, speaking into the dojo, and I'd hope to accord it the appropriate levels of procrastination and preparation. My apologies that this is largely raw and unedited, so please excuse me if it's not as well formed as it could be. The circumstance that I've found myself in over the last couple of years has been a matter of charging forward on a rapid roller coaster. It hasn't given me much time for reflection, and I think in some ways I've found that to be a virtue. But the impact of the practice and what it's I suppose allowed me to respond to and to operate with is implied for me, so I haven't analysed it there. Yeah, I'll make some reference to it during the talk, but it's not really something that I've gone into in great detail. I work as CEO for an organisation that operates in a number of island chains west of Sumatra. And following last year's quake in Padang, we're also working on the mainland. The organisation, Surf Aid, was started 10 years ago by a group of Kiwi surfers who were aiming to reduce the incidence of childhood mortality in the islands, particularly in the Mentawai Islands, where the tsunami was last month. It's a very isolated area, and it's also got what many consider to be the best surfing breaks in the world. So hence the connection and the name Surf Aid. I'm going to outline some of what's gone on with the organisation and what's gone on with my experience with the disaster response, and then speak more personally about how that experience has come and the relationship with the practice. So the islands west of Sumatra sit on the top of the Sumatran subduction zone. That's where the Indian Ocean plate has been dragged under the Burma plate. This subduction zone releases tension in approximately a 200-year super cycle. The Aceh quake that caused the Boxing Day tsunami, that was the first release of this current cycle. We've had also quakes in Nias, south of Aceh, with 8.7, and in the Mentawai in 2007, there was an 8.4 quake and a 7.9. They didn't cause tsunami, but there was still, 9 people died in the Mentawai in 2007. Surf Aid, by necessity, has acquired some experience in emergency response. We also do disaster risk reduction and psychosocial support programs have been added to the community-based health program. The organisation has grown up in the Sumatran environment. The locals are central to developing the approach, whether it's village elders in the Mentawai who have given input into a drama about malaria education, or Indonesian psychologists who came down from Aceh following Padang and trained Padang University students, psychology students, for our psychosocial program. So it's given a flavour to the organisation and the way that it works. There are no other international NGOs usually working in the Mentawai. At its closest point, it's anywhere from 5 to 14 hours by boat from Sumatra, depending on the size and speed of your boat and the weather. Most people live in coastal communities, and it's accessible only by sea. There are no roads, and it's usually across coral reefs. And also you've got the legendary swell that the surfers come for that comes up from the Roaring Forties. And the economy is not much beyond subsistence. So our government capacity and services are limited. And Surf Aid, having worked there for 10 years and having links to a fleet of surf charters, has the logistical capacity to respond in these in the case of disasters. And in this case, in October, the Indonesian government directly called on us to be the lead responding NGO. So that's the circumstance that I've been in over the last, particularly the last month. It's a huge shift for me, and it was largely unanticipated, particularly the emergency response aspect. In a previous life, I'd studied law, and I had focused on international human rights law, but then pretty quickly when it came to employment, I'd lurched to the dark side and taken a role in Sydney focused on private international law or trade law. While the nature of the work didn't disturb me unduly, it was usually trying to get multinational corporations to pay less tax, but it wasn't something that worried me particularly. But as time went on, I became less convinced that I wanted to stay in that environment, in that partnership structure. And with no kids to provide for, I had the luxury of being able to jump ship and look at other job options, which I did. But I was still unclear about where I was going to head, and I didn't really feel I had the confidence or the skills to step into a new sector, to a new environment. So I shuffled sideways with a couple of corporate roles, and that was pretty much where I was when I came here to Annandale 5 or 6 years ago. So I was really sparring a bit with a gnawing sense of dissatisfaction about my engagement with the world. And that's what I was sitting with. And yeah, bought to Jilly probably with repetitive frequency. I did undertake a course in non-profit management and some volunteer roles and non-profit consultancies. And I found, as time went on over the first year, 2 years, that sitting did steal me to an extent with a partial quietening of my internal narrator or critic. And I also found that exposure to the Zenny crew nurtured some unexpected hopes for new levels of vitality and curiosity beyond your 30s. I answered an ad in Seek and was taken on by Surf Aid. My role at that stage was managing the fundraising offices in Sydney and San Diego. At that stage, I had no knowledge of the subduction zone. And the role was a step off a cliff. And I found it was really dependent on good relations with a variety of people in different contexts. Now, everybody was well motivated, but they definitely had different perspectives and different agendas. I found that the practice helped locate me as I travelled around or spoke with people in different circumstances. And that the travel and the constant change worked with the practice in some ways, because it's hard to make assumptions. It's hard to predict what's going on or get into a rut when you're constantly jumping around. So in 2009, I took responsibility for the Indonesian operations of Surf Aid and became CEO. Coming from the corporate world, there's definitely a different dimension to the role. I think, as many of you know, in the non-profit sector, you get a broader sense of the people that you're working with, and you're more likely to be exposed to their better angels. It's a privilege to find yourself sitting in remote communities, workshopping with mothers the way to improve their children's health, you know, in areas where they're seeing a lot of death in the under fives, or squelching through a waterlogged evacuation route. So you find, or I found, that questions of motivation or mulling over quality of engagement pretty much get lost in the mud. I think the essence of the role that I've had is to build a consensus and maintain a common vision for Surf 8. And that involves keeping a diverse range of stakeholders engaged, most of whom have never or they seldom meet. It does require some level of equanimity, even though it may be shaky, but at least it's renewable. So that's the essential requirement that I've found for the role. I'm not sure now for me whether the scheming mind gets exhausted because of age or staring at walls, but I'm glad that it does. In the emergency responses, there's an incredible degree of intensity and focus on a common aim. It's a treat in many ways to be in such close interaction with people when mutual reliance is starkly displayed and objectives are so clear. Through the role that I've got and Surf 8's local expertise, I've been thrown into the thick of two major disaster responses. One that's still in play, so it's less than 4 weeks since the tsunami in the Mentawa. The 2009 earthquake hit Padang, which is a city of 900,000. It's the largest city of the Minangkabau people, which is a matrilineal culture from the highlands of Sumatra. The Minangkabau have got very strong cultural traditions, distinctive architecture, and are seen throughout Indonesia as religiously observant, but also very business orientated and highly valuing education. It's a port city that sits below forest-covered mountains, and it's famous for its swallow calls, which I would sit with often in the mornings before getting up and trying to direct an organisation where I couldn't speak the language and everybody knew their jobs better than I did. Many of these swallow calls before the quake came from Dutch area warehouses which were by the port, where the local Chinese would broadcast recordings of swallows to get them to nest in the old warehouses so that the bird nests could be acquired. Last year I flew into Padang on the second night after the quake. The quake had left over 1,300 people dead. Power was out. There were still fires burning, and people were sleeping on the streets through fear of further quakes. Art, our logistics manager, came to the airport. He's deeply competent, very amiable and hard to rattle. that evening, he'd locked his keys in the car and we had to break a window. That was the only sign that I've ever seen from him that he was stressed. That week, he was working 10 to 12 hour days, smiling, immaculately dressed, and going home to his family late at night. On day 5 after the quake, when we had an increased supply of tents, he quietly asked if we could use one. His house had been destroyed. His wife and 3 daughters had no shelter for those 5 days. There's also a rapid level of intimacy. So even during that time, on the 3rd day, Art had taken me down to buy the new season durian and relished the buzz that gorging on durian can give you, and was laughing at my more tepid kind of intake of the pungent fruit. I also found during that time our program director had, our new program director had been on for 3 weeks. I'd given him an orientation and then left 2 weeks before. Had been in the Ambachang Hotel, which had collapsed, with 110 people dying inside the building. He was determined to play his role. He was a medical doctor. And he had a meditation practice. He was, all of us were finding it difficult, but David particularly was not sleeping, would not sit inside buildings, and was trying to perform his role. He had a lot of experience in Darfur, and he'd worked in Haiti as well. So he brought a lot of skills into the organisation, but I found that I would sit with him in a tree, in the trunk of a tree, at dawn in a paddy field, and we'd sit there with the sun burning off the morning clouds, and then move forward and face the day. We didn't always agree with how things were playing out over that week, but each morning we were able to have this form of practice. Before David went back to his family in the States. This October, I was in Padang when the quake struck. It was 9:45 at night, and it lasted about 50 seconds. That's it's a long quake, and it's long enough to cause a tsunami. There were evacuations in Padang, but there was no inundation. The west coast, there was no inundation on the mainland. The west coast of the Mentawai is so remote that the news didn't come through of the carnage there until the next day. We started to hear in the morning when Wattie, who works with us in the islands, stood in the wreckage of a house on a chair with her phone taped to a stick, waiting for the clouds to allow a text message to transmit that many houses in her village were gone and people had died. That was the first that we had heard, and we were able to notify Jakarta, which was also the first time that they had news of what had gone on in the Mentawai. Wattie had gone back to work in her home village after graduating from university. She's now staying in the Mentawai. She's got a much greater challenge than we had anticipated. There is a life-affirming immediacy to emergency situations. Lesser concerns evaporate and adrenaline takes over for some time. The merciless side of nature is thrust in front of you, as is human adaptability. There is a further great quake, which is a technical term, of 8.5 to 8.9 on the Richter scale that's required to release the tension in the remaining lock section of the Sumatran subduction zone. That's under the northern Mentawai Islands. The quakes last month and in 2007 were under the south. Seismologists all agree that the quake is imminent in geological terms and it will cause a tsunami on the mainland of 5 to 6 metres. The Friday before the tsunami, I was in Canberra trying to get funding for a disaster risk reduction program in the Mentawai and the other islands of west of Sumatra. The prospect of this big one is known in the islands and it's known on the mainland. In the past few weeks, I've seen thousands of people nightly in nightly migrations from coastal villages to sleep rough in the hills. Many more joined them when a rumour swept the islands that the big one would come exactly 12 days after the October 25 tsunami. But that was during the worst storm in 8 years. So there were thousands of people going up, sleeping rough, children with diarrhoea and a lot of older people with respiratory problems. In Padang, following the quake last year, many people would fear staying in the shower or the toilet in case they were trapped. Some people who had escaped from buildings would not sleep inside, or they would never go far from an exit of a building during the day. Like many people, I carried around an evacuation bag with running shoes and food, a bit of cash and a water filter. It was interesting to see how the culture changed and this behaviour relaxed over a few weeks. And now in Padang, you can see new constructions, new apartment buildings being built on the coastline. Coming out of that environment and just being able to sit on the bus and hear the bird calls, sit around with friends and talk about whatever else is going on, is a good, it's a reassuring thing to be able to do. As in to board a train and realise that you're not fearful of getting trapped from an earthquake. Without a form of practice, I wouldn't have had the inclination the senseless bravery, whatever it is, to go into walk into these situations. It's been a remarkable roller coaster, one that I think I hope will leave me with lessons about how to respond in less dramatic, less vivid circumstances. It is a remarkable experience to act as a conduit for support and empathy for what's going on in these situations, and it's. Been the most compelling stage of my life.